Wawa wee wo.
Wawa wee wo.
Episode 52.
Fifty toes. 52. That means that's like 52 weeks are in a calendar year. That means we've been doing this for a year almost.
Wow.
Or about, yeah.
And in podcast years, that's 52 years.
Yeah.
In this episode, we're going to talk about how the New York Times is trash for hiring Barry Weiss because she's a crazy person.
And how that also ties into Israel passing a nation state law that further discriminates against Arab, Palestinians, Muslims. And then we call my dad.
And it's so uplifting.
It's the best time ever. Gosh. Please stay tuned. The end of the episode is my favorite. My dad tells the best stories. You'll need to hear them. And yeah.
Shoo shoo.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hey.
Hi.
Episode 52. What a zoo this nation is.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing you have us to guide you through. I can't think of anything that rhymes with is. I'm sorry, guys. I tried.
It's okay.
This is episode 52, Ethnically Ambiguous.
Yes.
Yay.
Episode 52. I will sue you, said America.
Thanks so much for the feedback from last week. We really enjoyed calling Anna's dad. And if you stay tuned till later in the episode, we're also going to call my dad.
Yes, my father's going to get a Twitter to interact with all his newfound fans. And,
I think it'd be a hit.
I really don't want him on Twitter, so we're not going to encourage it. But he's on Instagram, but you might see his comments on our photos every once in a while.
They're great comments. He comments really solid content.
He just says, great job.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Beautiful women. Beautiful girls. Yeah. He's very
old school.
Yeah, he only has a few drafts of what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Save responses.
Yeah. Save responses. I'm like, great job.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks, Dad. Just proud of you.
Yeah. It's like, that's a picture of a dog.
Beautiful girls.
Yeah.
That's a. Okay.
But yeah, how's your week been? Okay.
that's about it. Not much to report here. I've mentally shut off to all things, as you do when the world is going to explode. I do plan, as I've been tweeting all week, that I am going to solve this Russia-US situation. I'm still waiting on my Prime shipment.
Amazon Prime
shipment of red string corkboard and pins to come in. And before you know it...
You can't solve anything without those objects.
No. Yeah. And it's just so crazy to me because, of course... If you don't know what's happening, maybe you saw the Trump-Putin press conference in Helsinki. I'm going to tell you right now that P-tape is real.
Mm-hmm.
It's so real. I have never seen a man have his balls in another man's hand so hard while the other man squeezed it to be like, don't say a fucking word, do everything I say.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually kind of crazy now. Like, it's so real.
How did
Putin has something on you? And also...
Why is it a P-tape, though? How do we know it's a P-tape?
Because... Russia has a history of blackmailing people that they want stuff out of, like diplomats,
politicians.
Because that was what came out in the Steele dossier. But they have a history of doing that with getting prostitutes to meet up with these people and then filming it. Like, this has happened multiple times. Like, blackmail is Russia's thing.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
it's so real now. Now it's like, oh, okay, well, that's real. All right, so now there's all these servers that are connected to Betsy DeVos and whatever the fuck, and Trump and Alpha Bank. And there's so much going on that it's like, just we gotta get that corkboard, got that red string. We can figure out what happened here. And I bet intelligence officials already know.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like sitting on it right now because you clearly...
They can't do anything about it.
Well, it's just with the Mueller investigation. I think they're sitting on it for the time being. And, assuming they don't completely fuck Rod Rosenstein. But, I mean, you know, like, life's a great, everything's great. Russia's, everyone start learning Russian, because the time will come where we are all going to become Russian citizens, because we have to.
I mean, Russian is a great language. I know a very elementary amount of Russian because my friend lives in Russia and I went there in 2016.
This will soon be the United States of Russia.
Yeah.
So get ready for that.
My week was a little strange. So the supervisor that I mentioned in the last episode, the one that was like, "You're from Serbia," and I was like, "No, I'm not. I'm from Syria." But I've worked with this person since February, and we just finished the job that we were doing. I'm freelance, so I work like on and off. So I was working with her pretty consistently since February, and so that's just some context. But I was like focusing really hard, I guess, on Tuesday. I believe it was like our last day of work, and I was like on my computer with my headphones in, like trying to type away. And I guess someone asked me a question, and I take my headphones out, and I say, "What?" And I guess the way I said "what" was, like, snappy or something. I don't know. And so she goes, "Whoa, Shireen's on one today. She's about to go jihad on us." Mm. And all I could say in that moment was, "Wow, that's an appropriate thing to say."
Mm.
And I just couldn't, I didn't know what to do. In that, I mean, like,
in that situation, I would do a thing called call HR, because what the fuck? Why is that an okay thing to say? You cannot call jihad.
Yeah,
would you watch one movie about the Middle East? Jesus Christ!
It got me really sad, because even though I've been working with her for months now, I'm still someone that she looks at and sees someone different than her. You know what I mean? I'm still an other. I'm still someone that needs to prove that, like, when I get angry, I'm not just an angry Arab or, like, whatever it is. You know what I mean? So that was just disappointing. And, it just made me sad that it was coming from someone that I was working intimately with. And this is, even though I work freelance, this is someone I was seeing every day since, like, February for the most part. So, it was kind of shitty. Just an update on that.
Who can you contact?
I don't know, because
HR?
We're both freelance, both me and this person. So
yes,
it's like,
but you can have it so this woman is never hired by this company again.
I don't know if that would work.
You cannot let people do stuff like that. You can't let people speak to you like that. That's crazy. Jihad?
I know.
That's wild. If anyone at this work said that to, I mean, at our work, obviously anything goes, but like, if it was said in a way that made me uncomfortable, I would fucking, honestly, I would HR the shit out of that person.
She meant, okay, I'm not defending her, but like, she was laughing as she said it, which I think made it worse for me. Like, it was like a joke to her, not realizing that like it was incredibly offensive. But I was already like Mrs. PC person over here, and like, like, I made a comment. She called someone a cocksucker last week, and I was like, nothing wrong with sucking cock. And then. Then she like brought it up again the next day. She was like, "Oh, sorry. Like, can I call this person a cocksucker?" Like, I don't know. I was already like someone that was, I've already established myself as someone that is like PC culture in her eyes. So, I don't know. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Goes on and says, "Jihad."
Yeah.
You know, some people deserve a fist up their asshole, and she's one of them.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation.
It's not that tricky. You shouldn't have it so she's never hired by that company again, because fuck that.
But like, then she won't ever hire me.
You don't need to work with her again. That's a shitty person.
I've gotten so much of my work from her this year.
Oh, Jesus.
This is okay. I know if I was talking to someone else, I would tell them to report her as well. But I need money. I need to live. My friend the other week told me I was their poor friend. That really hit hard for me. It's weird because you have to make, I mean, like, I'm not equating this at all to like the Me Too movement or anything like that, but you hear stories about how women will accept being treated a certain way because they rely on that person for whatever reason. Like, it's a power dynamic. Like, you can't be too rude to that person because they give you work, because you are indebted to them for whatever reason. So I can understand how those people feel when you're discriminated against or feel uncomfortable and you still have to put up with it because you're reliant on them for something or you feel like you are. I don't know. Yeah. On a better note, if we want to transition really quick, I meant to bring this up a couple weeks ago, and I keep fucking forgetting, and I'm really sorry about that, but we got an email from Lita Deonti in June, and I kept forgetting to bring it up, but she's a woman in San Diego that's putting together, I just wanted to shout out this organization that's really doing great things. She's a woman in San Diego, and she is Iranian, and she moved from LA to San Diego for to work for a full-time nonprofit called Hearts for Refugees. It's part of the Syrian Community Network in San Diego. And so she has an organization where she is spearheading this project. It's a funding campaign through Facebook to fund driver's education programs for refugee women called Women at the Wheel. And so if you guys are interested in really supporting a great cause, just look it up, Women at the Wheel on Facebook. It helps refugee women in San Diego have more independence and agency in their lives, and it helps them get jobs and further their education by attending ESL courses, English as a Second Language courses, and other classes. And yeah, so I meant to shout it out a long time ago, but
I remember getting this email. I forgot about it as well. Sorry,
yeah. we get bombarded sometimes with like other source, other like a lot of people. Telling
also,
us
if you
things.
Want us to shout you out and we don't respond, just follow up because 100% chance we'll shout you out. We just forgot.
Yeah, exactly. But you are doing
definitely
amazing
check
work,
that out.
And it's something that I really admire and just kind of gives me hope that someone would dedicate their time to a nonprofit to really better people that have it that are less fortunate than them, kind of. So, yeah. A lot of refugee women come here and they don't know how to drive because they either never learned in their country. Even though driving for women is legal in Syria, a lot it's just tradition sometimes where you don't learn how to drive right away. Like my mom learned how to drive when she moved here. So it's a good organization to support because you come here with nothing and you're trying to rebuild your life, and driving is essential to that. So yeah. Yawns.
Sorry, I didn't mean to yawn that moment. No, but okay. Just looking at there's a window in our studio and there's like a giant billboard that it's like a dog and it's for the show Preacher and it says "In Dog We Trust." Anyway, guys, content has gone too far. Okay, so today I just want to breathe into the microphone. How are you doing, Shireen?
I'm fine.
This is the ASMR section of the show.
We're going to start opening up some containers. And
yeah, I want to talk about, literally, like, she's not directly my nemesis, but she will be soon when I come for her. Maybe you probably don't know who this is unless you're deep into the New York Times op-ed section, like I sometimes go for ill reason. Look, you know what? I'm going to just say this right now, and I've said it before in the past. Maybe you heard me. Maybe you haven't. I don't know. I can't honestly recall what I've said it on. But New York Times is trash.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but I don't know what y'all fucking doing these days, but fuck yourself. And I say that because, one, if you haven't noticed, all their fucking headlines are trash. Like, they say, like, when the Gaza situation was at its height and Israelis were killing civilian Palestinians, their headlines would say stuff like, oh, this many people dead versus this many people actually
murdered.
Killed.
Yeah.
So they've always had this bias, which they refuse to ever acknowledge. They would never acknowledge a blatant bias, but more than anything, I think the day they hired this bitch, Bari Weiss, to be an op-ed columnist for the New York Times is the day they really, really nailed in the fact that they're like fake diverse. They're like, whoa,
they
hire all
colors.
These diverse,
yeah.
You know, people to write op-eds. And it's like, no, when you hire someone like Bari Weiss or this other idiot, like anti-Arab writer Brett Stevens, who are two, I believe they were both hired last year, like mid-year,
out of Wall Street Journal to become op-ed page columnists. You really let us know that you actually don't care about diversity. Mm-hmm. You care kind of to suppress voices because, okay, I'm going to back up. Barry Weiss. Let me give you a little breakdown on who this dumb bitch is. And honestly, I wasn't going to talk about her today until last night when I saw she won an award for her writing. And I'll get to that later. I'll explain that. And when bullshit. I saw this, oh my God, we retweeted this on our Twitter page. Go look at that thread and go look at everyone just being like, So it's fucking, it's like the funniest, darkest thread of people being like, I don't think so. Yeah. Or just like, K. Like that's, it's fucking insane. So, Barry Weiss, this bitch, she's an op-ed columnist. She's an aggressive pro-Israel activist, and the majority of her work, while she claims herself to be like this martyr of free speech and so provocative and blah 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 dumb bullshit, she's basically a pro fucking Israel Islamophobic writer who attacks anyone who's even remotely critical of Israel. That's her whole thing. Her entire
shtick,
her entire writing and like activism is built on defending Israel and then destroying and like going after people who don't give Israel all their love and joy, basically. Yeah.
Also, knowing that the New York Times made her an op-ed writer and gave her an award, that just shows
New York Times didn't give her the award, but she won an award for basically her New York Times op-eds.
But it's just like, it shows what the American media is interested in as far as writers go versus like Al Jazeera, which is like unbiased news.
This is how her formula is described by The Intercept. She channels whatever prevailing right-wing grievance exists about colleges, Arabs, or Israel cities, ideally all of those, into a column that's supposed to be provocative because it maligns minority activists or fringe positions that are rarely given platforms on the New York Times op-ed page. That's what she does. The Intercept nailed it. So Barry Weiss says she got involved in journalism through activism, but that activism started when she was a student at Columbia University in New York, where she basically was part of this movement, which was launched by the film Columbia Unbecoming, which accused Arab and Muslim professors at Columbia of bullying Jewish and Israeli students. And basically, it said that, like, these Arab professors who are members of one of America's most marginalized groups are oppressors of Jewish students. And I went and I looked up the report from Columbia, and I found this that said, the release of a faculty report on complaints that pro-Palestinian professors at Columbia University had intimidated Zionist students triggered new campus debates yesterday on issues of intimidation and academic freedom. While the faculty committee reported no proof of anti-Semitism, it said it had found one instance of unacceptable behavior by Professor Joseph Massad in the Middle Eastern Studies Department. It also condemned a lack of civility on campus, including the behavior of some pro-Israel students who heckled professors during classes and lectures on Middle East studies. And of course, Columbia said they don't have any like procedures set to deal with this kind of madness. And
But that was her introduction to activism, quote unquote.
Yeah, it was like she's so trash. So one of the Arab professors targeted, which was Joseph Massad, he said it is the latest salvo in a campaign of intimidation of Jewish and non-Jewish professors who criticize Israel. The New York Civil Liberties Union condemned the campaign and the film, The Columbia Unbecoming, because it was like a witch hunt designed to punish critics of Israel. And they said the attack on Professor Massad and other in the Middle East Studies Department is really about their scholarship and political expression. So that was her start. That's, you know, where she really got her stepping stone. And right after college, she was hired by, she went to Israel for a while and worked there for like Tablet and all those other, like, I don't know, Jewish papers and or Israeli papers. And then she was hired by the Wall Street Journal, and then she was quoted, and if you know, Wall Street Journal is also conservative trash. Mm-hmm. So she said the op-ed age was perfect for her politics, and she was quoted as saying
It, in quotes, can often be an island of sanity for those of us who care about Zionism and Israel, which is like,
wow,
cool. Good for you. Another one of her attacks on a Middle Eastern / Muslim person was when she participated in a campaign to destroy the reputation of Nadia Abu El Haj, who is an American born academic who received a Fulbright scholarship and a fellowship to Harvard. And she's getting a doctorate in anthropology, and she has a Palestinian Muslim father and American Episcopalian mother. So she wrote this book in 2002, which was like an anthropological study of Jewish claims to its like biblical entitlement of mm-hmm. Israel and all that. And it won a bunch of awards. So the book was documented in a New York Times article as Israeli archaeologists search for an ancient Jewish presence to help build the case for a Jewish state. They sometimes use bulldozers, destroying remains of other cultures, including those of Arabs. So her book, Abu El Haj's book, it questioned, like, you know, anthropological conclusions and, you know, that Israel used to, you know, do what they do. So she based this woman, this doctorate, if you will, she moved to New York and she got a teaching position at Barnard College, and which is the Women's College of Columbia. And she applied for tenure. And then all these people who were basically Zionists came after, including Bari, and said, like, don't give it to her because she is ignorant and is defaming Israel and doesn't know what she's talking about, basically. And so here's where it really went in. So Bari at the time was living in Jerusalem and writing, I think, for Haaretz, which is like that Israeli daily. And so I love The Intercept writes, with no training or expertise whatsoever in anthropology, a deficiency she made up for with her ample passion for publicly smearing Israel critics. Weiss attacked Abu El Haj in the Haaretz, arguing, this is not just another round between the Zionists and anti-Zionists, but instead is about the nature of truth and the possibility of, well, facts themselves. This is a person who has no facts,
wow,
saying that this woman who wrote an entire book based off facts doesn't know what she's talking
about.
Someone
that's like research in that subject, yes, has a degree in that subject.
So that's an underlying theme of Bari Weiss.
Yeah.
She uses her like privilege to just push her insane fucking ideas, and it's all
her
like
Zionist agenda.
Do not come after Israel or I will call you a fake, basically, or whatever, yeah, the fuck. She's an idiot, and she like has this thing where she's like this champion of free thought on college campuses because she tried to like punish and like stigmatize and attack like Arab professors who criticize Israel, and
free thought also means you're free to be an Arab person that thinks, yes, that Palestine is a real place.
She has
to be
no interest in, wow, in Arabs. She's like so Islamophobic, it's insane. Like,
yeah,
her journalism is just like Zionist activism. That's all it is. That's yeah. So her whole preoccupation is defending Israel, and New York Times hiring her and being like, this is a person who is diverse, and
wow,
you know, she writes about diverse topics is the complete opposite of what they're really trying to push. It's not real, it's all fake. It's like, sure, New York Times, if you really believed in like true diversity, you wouldn't hire this like crazy Zionist who,
yeah,
shuts down literally her and her bullshit feminism. And also I love this, one of her like favorite people, like writers that she like loves and like admires and is a friend of hers, is John Podhoretz, who's literally an advocate of genocide.
What?
Yeah, you should. Her group of people that she loves is so bad. So this guy, John Podhoretz, in a New York Post column in 2006, he wondered whether the tactical mistake we made in Iraq was that we didn't kill enough Sunnis in the early going to intimidate them and make them afraid of us.
My mouth is agape.
So he added, wasn't the survival of Sunni men between the ages of 15 and 35 the reason there was an insurgency and the basic cause of sectarian violence now? So these are the kind of people she aligns herself with, okay?
Wow.
She's a fucking idiot. She's a racist. Not that she would ever admit to such things. She's Islamophobic. And she spreads anti-just Arab rhetoric all over the fucking place.
Yeah.
And after the break, I will name a few op-ed pieces she wrote that are, you're gonna like this. We'll be right back. And we're back. Before the break, I was talking about Full Psycho Habari Weiss, who's an op-ed columnist at the New York Times. So a few of her op-eds that she's written, here's one where she attacks the organizers of the Chicago Dyke March, which is just the March for Lesbians, because they excluded flags that contained the Star of David on the grounds that it was too close to the Israeli flag, because they didn't want anyone to be triggered by, like, mm-hmm. Zionism. They're basically like,
wow, people that are, like, on the right side of history.
Yeah, and so she attacked them and was just like, this is not okay. It's, like, you know, anti-Semitic, blah, blah, blah. And then, then she wrote another piece where she attacked the minority women who organized the Women's March, because one of the women, who is this Palestinian, she praised various Muslims that we're all expected to hate. So she, like, went after this girl and, like, ripped her apart.
Wow.
Yes. She does not like, she doesn't like Muslims. She doesn't like Arabs. She doesn't like anyone. She only likes Israel. And then, after that, the other op-ed she put out was that she, like, mocked, campus critics of cultural appropriation. And let me just tell you, all these op-eds she's written have been ripped apart. Like, people have just been like, yeah, you're a fucking idiot.
How did she get an award for writing?
Exactly, Shireen. This is the world we live in currently. Yeah.
She like, almost wants to take charge of her own narrative, because she says, I will inevitably be called racist for cheering on cultural misintegration.
Well, that's the thing. She always kind of goes, like, she likes to, like, be like, I'm such a martyr. And so she, like, makes these, like, proclamations about, yeah, how she's going to get attacked for saying this. And it's like, if you know you're going to be attacked, yeah, for saying it, it's because you're probably saying some bullshit, yeah, dude. No wonder.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Like, she's like, I'll be accused of siding with the alt-right or TARDIS Islamophobic.
Yeah.
Well, you tend to be what you say you are, mm-hmm, you know? Like, even, yeah, if you're playing a
when
role.
When someone is like, I'm not racist, that means they're racist, you know?
Yeah. And she's, you know, there was this really great line. There's a really great article about her on The Intercept being real trash. And, of course, all this stuff will be in our footnotes, so you can really dissect her shit-ass writing. So they say, she's just another thoroughly mainstream writer who thrives on cheap, easy, and superficial controversy, who sees herself as a brave intellectual dissident, as she is continually celebrated by and gets promoted within the most mainstream media circles, all for spouting conventional and power-flattering critiques of largely powerless figures. So that's what the New York Times is hiring. That's who they want writing their fucking bullshit-ass op-eds. Yeah, she is what's wrong with this country.
Yeah.
If you come at the...
I mean, that's the whole reason we even started the show, is because so much of American media was pushing an agenda that was untruthful and Zionist, and just focusing on, like, it's unfortunate that the New York fucking Times, one of the biggest news sources in America, is behind someone that is a literal garbage,
yeah,
can.
And most of her targets are Muslim and or Arab
minority women.
Yes. And then one time she used her New York Times space to basically endorse this claim by this basically endorse a smear campaign against the first Muslim elected U.S. congressman,
what?
Named Keith Ellison, by saying that the man with a long history of defending and working with anti-Semites was almost made leader of the Democratic National Committee. And guess what? Keith Ellison is not an anti-Semite. The only thing he ever said, well, he's anti-Israel because he thinks Israel takes billions of dollars from us every year and then proceeds to break all our rules by continuing to make settlements. That's what he said. They use this as an ATM machine, and then nobody cares and it's not okay. So he said that, and everyone's like, anti-Semite. And it's like, no, motherfuckers. Yeah. His views are just fact-based.
Yeah.
Israel takes billions of dollars from the U.S. and then does whatever the fuck they want and ignores us and does not give a fuck. So fuck you, Barry Weiss. You're an idiot.
Yeah, fuck you.
You don't get to walk around and think your Zionism is journalism because you have this huge platform now.
Yeah.
She also is a fucking
piece of shit when it comes to the Me Too movement, because she wrote this op-ed piece that was called it was called The Limits of Believe All Women, which is stupid. Wow. And what, this is a quote from it: I believe that the believe all women vision of feminism unintentionally fetishizes women. Women are no longer human and flawed. They are truth personified. They are above reproach. I believe that it's condescending to think that women and their claims can't stand up to interrogation and can't handle skepticism. I believe that facts serve feminists far better than faith, that due process better than mob rule. You dumb bitch, you are missing the point. Women for their whole fucking lives since the turn of the century have had to stand up to interrogation and handle skepticism. So don't start. Like, you're such a fucking idiot. It's actually crazy to me. And also, most of the New York Times writers apparently hate her based off an internal chat room, aka Slack, that was leaked to HuffPost, which everyone was being like, what the fuck is this dumb bitch doing? And yeah, it's bad. And it's all based off when Mirai Nagasu, who was the figure skater who was born in California, she landed a triple axel and basically fucking Barry Weiss tweeted, immigrants, they do it better, or something like that. And then everyone was like, bitch, she was born in California, she's not an immigrant. So she's already like, and she basically,
but this person has a platform,
she's an idiot, and she has just no ability to not basically perpetually other someone, and she has no sense. She doesn't care. She just is like this martyr, or believes she's this martyr. And it's really what's wrong with media today. Is like, you can't hire people like this. You can't hire people who have just such blatant agendas.
Yeah. And unfortunately, this Zionist agenda is actually a law now in Israel. And this is very unfortunate. And I'm sure Barry Weiss is thrilled about this. And that's how you know it's bullshit. Israel passed a controversial, quote, Jewish nation state law. The law defines the country as a Jewish homeland, further marginalizing the 1.8 million Palestinian citizens of Israel, and it makes it official. The Israeli parliament passed a law defining the country as the nation state for Jewish people, and it encourages the development of Jewish settlements and considers them of national value, while considering settlements are illegal under international law. Yusuf Jabarin, he's a member of the Knesset, which is the Legislative Committee of Israel, he said, this is a bill from a government that is an enemy of Palestinians. It is the most dangerous measure. It's a law from a racist government against Palestinian rights, and it creates an apartheid regime. It officially turns Israel into a fascist state. The law also downgrades the Arabic language, and it strips Arabic of its designation as the official language of Israel and Palestine, and it downgrades it into a, quote, special status that still enables it to be used in Israeli institutions. The bill was adopted by 62 votes to 55, and this vote also passed that Hebrew was the country's national language, and it defines the establishment of Jewish communities as being of national interest, and it claims also that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. And many fear that this law will lead to even more discrimination against Palestinian citizens of Israel, who are already treated unwelcome in their own land and in their own home.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Discrimination against Palestinian Muslims is likely to only get worse, and half of his... Meanwhile, this is a really unsettling stat, but half of Jewish Israelis are in favor of transferring or expelling Israel's Palestinian population. The 1.8 million Palestinians make up only 20% of Israel's population at this point.
They want to just get rid of them altogether. Yeah. And where would they go?
That sounds similar to, I don't know, there's a thing in the 40s called the Holocaust. But but you didn't hear that from me. But legislation, it's a defining moment. So Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, garbage on fire, I hate him so much. After the Knesset did the vote, he said, this is a defining moment in the annals of Zionism and the history of the State of Israel. So he's proud of this Zionist step forward, and it makes it seem like the only step forward for Israel is to be a Zionist state. Obviously, Palestinian members of the Knesset have condemned the bill. Ayman Odeh, who is the head of the Arab Joint List, he said, it has passed a law of Jewish supremacy and told us that we will always be second-class citizens. Ahmed Tibi, one of the legislators, said, I announce with shock and sorrow the death of democracy. Yeah. It's not good, you guys. This is a bad move. Whenever you're making, I'm just going to keep reading these quotes because they're more eloquent than I can ever be. But Al Jazeera's Stephanie Decker, she reported from Jerusalem saying that the bill entrenches into Israeli law what has already been an active policy of segregation and discrimination by Israeli authorities. It's symbolic, but it's actively putting into law in Israel's constitution and highlighting the way forward for this country. It is not a message of inclusivity or democratic one. The nation state law features key elements of apartheid, which is not only immoral, but absolutely prohibited under international law. This is what Hassan Jabrin, the director of the ADLA, which is the Legal Center for Arab Minority Rights in Israel, he said, that he called the law a bid to advance, quote, ethnic superiority by promoting racist policies.
Mm-hmm.
And that it features, right. Yeah, that's completely right. It's racist and stupid. And it features this nation state law features key elements of apartheid, which defines sovereignty and democratic self-rule as belonging solely to the Jewish people. Wherever they live in the world, Israel has made discrimination a constitutional value and professed its commitment to favoring Jewish supremacy as a bedrock of institutions.
That sounds right.
I'm quoting most of this material from an Al Jazeera article, which is, as usual, A1 amazing. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage you guys read the whole article. It describes more what exactly is racist about apartheid. Yusuf Farage, he's 53. He lives in a nearby Druze village of Yanu. And he said, the purpose of this law is discrimination. They want to get rid of Arabs totally. You have all these Palestinians that already feel unwelcome in their own land. And they're quoted saying that Israelis want to destroy all religions of the Arabs. I think this racist legislation is a radical right-wing government that is creating radical laws and is planting the seeds to create an apartheid state. A physician, Bassam Bishada, said that... But yeah, it deepens the sense of alienation that Palestinian Muslims already feel. The Palestinian Arab community in particular, it's a huge blow to them. And like, where are they supposed to go? If half of the population of Israelis want them to be expelled from the fucking country, like that's abhorrent. And it's just really disappointing. But Israel's Palestinian population, it comprises mainly of descendants that have remained on their land since 1948, which is the time of establishment of the modern state of Israel. And the fledgling state consolidated control over Palestinian lands on the back of an ethnic cleansing campaign where hundreds of thousands were forced to leave their homes.
Hmm.
That's how Israel was created, and that's mm-hmm. how it's staying in power. If you look at a map of when Israel was created in 1948, and a map over the years, decades, and now, it's swallowed up Palestine. It's just disgusting. And Netanyahu defended the law. He said, "We will keep ensuring civil rights in Israel's democracy, but the majority also has rights, and the majority decides."
Wow, Netanyahu also
trash?
Yeah, trash, and he totally work with anti-Semites. It's insane. Yeah. He has no backbone, and also there's no consistency to him.
No. He said...
Well, there's one consistency. He's a racist colonialist. But
oh, exactly.
That,
he's a racist colonialist, Zionist, garbage human. But he said an absolute majority wants to ensure our state's Jewish character for generations to come. That's just...
Oh, nice, 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 nice.
Yeah.
We're all gonna die.
Yeah, so even though technically the Palestinians that have remained in Israel, even though they technically have full equal rights under the law, they say they still face constant discrimination, and they cite inferior services and unfair allocations for education, health, and housing. And there's another article that I'll put in the footnotes about... The five ways, there's like at least five ways of Israeli law discriminating directly against Arab Muslims and, or I mean, Palestinian Arabs and Palestinian Muslims. But yeah, it's not a good move. And it's kind of unsettling. Like, I was hanging out with some friends the other day, and I was hanging out with like some Jewish friends. And one of my friends who introduced me to this group, he was like, yeah, don't talk about, like, don't tell them you're anti-Israel here. And I was like, what? Mm. Like, why? Like, also, like, why do you assume just because they're Jewish, they're pro-Israel? I don't know. Yeah. It made me kind of, it just rubbed me the wrong way. But I'll bring up some of these laws that discriminate against Palestinians after a quick break. And we're back. So before we get to the best part of this episode, in which I call my dad, I wanted to bring up a little bit of this article. It's the 5 ways Israeli law discriminates against Palestinians. More than 65 Israeli laws already exist that discriminate against Palestinians in Israel and in occupied territories. More than half of these laws were adopted since 2000, and from 2009 to the present, elections have brought to power the most right-wing government coalitions in the history of Israel, led by, obviously, garbage man Netanyahu. Nothing... I don't want to make... I mean, like, he's a garbage person, not someone that collects garbage. Those are the backbone of our life. But, yeah, I encourage you to read the rest of this article, and so many, like, the right to return, the right to residency, the right to family life, the right to commemorate Nebka, all of these things are the right to acquire, the right to lease land. They're all put into the Israeli constitution that are and they discriminate against Palestinian citizens. They make it harder for them to live there because they don't want them there. But yeah, please check out our footnotes and these links that I'll be putting in there. We'll also be putting all of the stuff that Anna talked about. The Intercept article is phenomenal about Barry Weiss. So yeah, check it out. And now... So I'm going to call my dad, but before I do, so last week I mentioned that I was not able to see him for his birthday, which was on Sunday the 15th, and right after the episode we stopped recording, I called my dad, and I was like, what are you doing for your birthday? And he was like, nothing, your sisters aren't going to be here, and whatever, and it made me kind of sad. So I organized this whole thing, I gathered my sisters, and I was like, are all free on Sunday? They all were. So I drove down with my little sister. I picked up my other sister in Long Beach and with her boyfriend. And we all drove down. And it was Sunday. We left really early. We got there like 9:30 a.m. And we knocked on the door. We rung the doorbell at my parents' house. And my dad comes out very surprised in like a robe. And he had no idea. And we surprised him all. And he was so happy. Nice. And we had the best day ever. And both my parents were so surprised, and that's it was so a really, really fun day.
You didn't tell your mom either?
No, it was cool. I love surprises. I live for surprises.
Yeah.
So I was all about it. But now I'm going to call my dad. And also, Anna gave him Ethnically Ambiguous mug from our merch store, and he loved it so much. Nice. Because he saw Anna's dad on Instagram with all the merch, and he got jealous. He was going to buy all of it himself. And then I was like, no, I'll get you some. Don't worry. But yeah, he's amazing, and I'm gonna call him right now. Okay, let's see if he answers.
Shoo shoo.
Hi, Baba. He just said the prettiest girl in the world in Arabic, for guys that don't speak Arabic, but he says that to all my sisters, so it's not just me. Hi, Baba.
Hey, hello.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. So last week we called Anna's dad. Anna's here too.
Hi.
Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Last week we called Anna's dad, and this week we're calling you.
All right. I'm excited.
Are you?
Yeah.
So were you surprised when I surprised you on your birthday?
It was a wonderful surprise. It was like, it meant the world to me that the three of you comes with Tori as well.
My sister's
birthday. It was an amazing day. I'm really thankful for you because it was your idea and I really appreciate it.
But don't you already know that it was my idea? Like, I didn't have to tell you. You already knew.
I knew it was your idea, of course.
Okay, so I want to talk to you a little bit about coming to America, because I can paraphrase as much as I want and like like secondhand stories that I've told or whatever, but I think coming from the source is better. So can you tell us a little bit about why you wanted to come to America?
Okay. How much time do we have?
We have all day.
Yeah.
Let me start. I need to do. I want to make a record straight with you about something.
Okay.
First of all, I'm sorry for the phone call that we did back where you were in college.
Oh my God, Baba, it's okay.
That's nice.
No, it's not. I really, really was. I felt really bad about it, and
Baba,
after
it's
we
okay.
hung up the phone, I felt bad, and I promised that I won't make you sad again.
Baba,
and for the record, I want to forget and forgive me for that.
Are you just want me to say it on tape that I forgive you so I can never bring it up again?
That's smart.
Okay, second smart thing technique. Is, I heard in the podcast the other day when Anna asked you when my family was asking me about you and your short and stuff like that.
Oh my God, Baba, why are we talking?
What did I say? I just want to make the, you know, my statement in this just
okay.
for a few seconds.
Okay, wait, actually, I'm curious too. What did you say?
Listen, I would never apologize for you guys, for you, three of you, for anything you've done, anything you choose to do, anything like not remotely. They have my parents or my family, let's say, they have no say whatsoever about how I raise you, and I will never apologize for anything you do, you choose to do, your personality, your choices, any of that.
Bubba.
So I always defend you no matter what.
Thank you.
The second thing.
I didn't know that. I mean, it's news to me.
The other thing.
Oh my God, you just planned this all out, okay?
I'm just.
This is his chance.
Because
yeah.
You said I have all day. So
no, but I mean,
advantage of it.
I mean, okay, just for people that are catching up. Last week, I mentioned that my dad's family like will call me out or like call my dad directly when they see me wearing shorts on social media, and I don't like that at all. And I genuinely didn't know how my dad would respond to that. But it's nice to know, Baba, that you defend us and you let me be myself, and you don't care about what they
say. I'm always have your backs, guys. It's, you know, sometimes I don't agree with all the stuff that you do, like the tattoos and stuff. I don't agree with it, but you know, I accept it. It's your choices, and I defend it no matter what.
Oh, I thought this was my dad for a second when you brought up the tattoos.
We all think the same.
Yeah, yeah, they really do. Okay, what's your third thing, please?
The third thing is, you have the floor. I just want you to know that I consider you. You and your sisters, my greatest accomplishment of all time. Besides that, I married the sweetest heart, the sweetest person on earth. Mm-hmm. You are my greatest accomplishment ever. I came to America to do exactly what you are now, that you are your own personality, your own individuals. I try to put in you to be honest, work hard, and you know, that's what you became to be. You know, you work hard. Each one of you has its own path, but I'm very proud of you. I just want to tell you that I'm the proudest dad ever.
Baba.
That's it.
Baba, you're the best.
Okay.
Wait, you're going to hang up.
What?
Oh,
question?
Yeah. So you already answered why you came to America. Okay. Can you? Okay. I know this might be a weird question, but your family wanted you to marry your cousin.
True.
Why did you not want to do that?
I hate it.
I really consider you the most liberal and open-minded of your family. Like, why do you think that is? Like, what do you think is different about you that you wanted to come to America, or you wanted to marry Mama, or like any of that?
Well, as you know, I don't agree with marriage between the families. You know, mm-hmm. I don't agree with that at all. You know, I opposed my brother when he married his cousin, mm. and I opposed my other brother when he married his cousin.
But like, why didn't they oppose it themselves? Like, why were you the odd man out in that situation?
I don't know. I've been, you know, my own personality since I was a kid. You know, I was like the rebel guy. I was like, I don't agree with everything that my family doing since the beginning. You know, I refuse to do stuff that you want me to do all the time, not just.
I know where I get it from.
But I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway. So I, you know, even though they were trying to have me in an arranged marriage for many, they let me see many girls. And every time I look at them, I say, look, this is short, this is long, this is I don't like, this is I don't like. And then when I saw your mom at work, and I was like the head of the civil engineers in the department there, I really, from the minute I saw her, I felt like, this is the lady I want to be with all my life.
Wow.
But for some reason, she got engaged to a guy that I hate, you know, till now.
We don't say his name in our family. I'm serious. That's amazing.
Don't say his name. Okay.
I won't say his name.
Yeah. And, I was his boss, and they got engaged. And I didn't like it at all. And every day that I call your mom to my office and tell her, look, you made the wrong choice. He's not the good guy for you. You have to leave him. And she keep telling me, you don't interfere with my life, you know, and stuff. She has very strong personality.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I sent the guy, like in 360 days in a year, I sent him like 300 to make tours around the country, so he won't be.
So you set him on trips so they would have a strain in their relationship.
That's amazing.
Exactly. And I quit my job at the gut. I opened my own practice as a civil engineer, and I thought, maybe she's gonna marry him. And suddenly I saw her one more time after that, and she said no, she like left him and she dumped him and she's available.
Ooh, la, la.
And that's when, I jumped in.
Well, okay, I heard the story that you told her you were looking for someone to marry, implying that you wanted to marry her, but then she set you up with her friend.
Right. So when I saw her, I told her, can you come to my office? I want to talk to you. And she came. I told her, look, because I didn't know how she feels about me. She hated me all the time that I was, So she came, I told her, look, I'm looking for a girl. I described your mom like from top to bottom, that this is the girl that I want. And she didn't get the message. So she brought me a friend of hers to the office, and she was, she told her that he's a successful engineer and you wanna marry, you wanna, meet with him, and she said, yes, they came to my office. I didn't speak to that girl. Not even one word. All the time I was talking to your mom. So the girl, when she left, she told your mom, look, like, he is in love with you. So what are you doing? And then your mom realized that I'm in love with her. And that's when our story started.
Aww. I love that so much.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it's a really good story. I've heard it from my mom and dad separately, and it's pretty good from the source. It's pretty good.
I like your tactics of sending him away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate him till now. I hate to see him. I hate to see,
Even saying his name makes my dad cringe.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you and Mama are still together and, still appear to love each other just as much as before, I mean, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
She is, really. The sweetest person you will ever meet. She is the love of my life. I love her so much.
Papa. That's so sweet. My mom is the best person on the planet, along with my dad. But my mom is very sweet. My dad made a good call.
I did.
Yeah. I credit my mom with all my weirdness.
Okay.
In a good way. Do you have any questions for my dad?
I don't know. What made you come to California? Was that one of your first choices, or just how it turned out when you got your visa to come here?
No, it wasn't my first choice at all. You know, when I was, you know, back in Damascus, and I was practicing my engineering, and my friends that, you know, they graduated the same year I did, they went to America. Some of them went to Detroit, Michigan. Some of them went to Dallas. Some of them went to New York, you know, and keep sending me pictures and you know, playing tennis and, they, you know, doing all this stuff, you know, and they keep telling me, come over, come over. So I took a visa, and I took an airline ticket that comes first to New York to spend like 2-3 days with the friend that I know there. And then I went to Michigan, and I spent there. It was, you know, it was like cold as ever. I never seen that cold in my life. And the guy who I went to, he was very cheap. He was like unbelievable. You
my
know?
Dad hates people that are cheap.
So, you know, I hate two kinds of people, you know, liars and cheap.
Yeah.
So I couldn't stand him whatsoever. So I left and I went to Dallas, Texas. And I didn't like the weather. It was super hot and I didn't like the weather. And then I came to Orange County, and the people who, you know, in Orange County, they were, I, you know, friends since we were in middle school. And they, you know, greet me at the airport with like the best reception you'll ever, you know, meet. Like they carry even my bags, and they took me to their home, and it was wonderful. So I said, this is it. I'm here. I'm here to stay. I'm not going to leave this city. That's when I came to Orange County. And then I moved to Riverside, and from Riverside to San Diego.
Yeah. Well, there was a bunch in between. We went to, like, we were in Westminster, we were in Corona. And,
but
yeah.
He knew.
Yeah.
Southern
yeah.
California yeah. was the place yeah. for you.
Yeah.
But that San was based Diego on the reception.
The
yeah,
best.
But that's.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. What else did I want to ask? Why weren't you able to become to continue being an engineer here?
Well, if I wanted to, I would, you know, if, you know, but you know that when I came, I was part owner in gas station, and I have a lot of customers. One of them was like 70 years old Indian guy who is an engineer, and I asked him, how much do you make? And he said, I make probably at that time, he said like $70,000. And I was making more than him at the gas station. So no, I'm not going to do that, you know, yeah. after all these years, I don't want to do that. I want to be my own person, my own boss, and you know, I cannot do that. Even though, you know, I did an exam, not a civil engineer exam. You know, when you come to America and you need to work as a civil engineer, you have to do an English exam. They call TOEFL. So I took the TOEFL. I studied for 6 months, even though when I came to America, I didn't know like much English at all. And I hate English when I was back in high school. So I, you know, I wasn't good in English at all. But when I had to, I studied the TOEFL for 6 months and I passed it, you know, in good. And they allowed me to work as a civil engineer, but I didn't.
I didn't know that. I thought you just couldn't work as a civil engineer.
No. If I wanted to, I was able to do, because I did the equivalent to my you know, I brought all my transcript, all my degrees from back home, translated to English, and I apply, and they give me like equivalent to the civil engineering that I have in Damascus. And by the way, this is how I, you know, there is a company that they used to have an account with us at the gas station. They have like a civil engineer company do some construction. And they said they need somebody to work for them. And that's why I got my green card through my civil engineer degree.
So it came in handy.
Yeah.
Wait, so you would have rather worked like the graveyard shift at a gas station than go...
You know, at the time that I worked the graveyard shift at the gas station, I couldn't work as a civil engineer. But when I came, the first week or 2 weeks, I want to just know America. I need to know the culture. I need to know the people. So, and then, you know, as you know, we sold our house back home, and the house that I bought everything that's my knowledge,
in Damascus,
money, yeah, everything I bought in that house. And when I decided to stay in America, I asked my brother there to sell the house for me, and he sold it, and he sent me some money, and I was, you know, I went part of that gas station. But because I didn't know much English, I had to learn it the hard way. So I really worked graveyard shift in the gas station. I used to clean all the toilets. I used to clean all the pumps of the gas station. I used to wash the floor in the gas station every night, even though it felt freezing cold sometimes.
Wow.
But I love it. I love it. You know.
You were grateful to be here.
I was really, till now, I'm very grateful to be here. You know, back home, the government or the people over there, they can stop you for any reason, and they can put you in jail for any reason they, you know, decide. Here, since I came here, like about, 32, 33 years now, the only time they stop me for traffic speed or for traffic violation or for something that has nothing to do with my business, my personality, my ideas, my thinking, or anything. Over there, it was, see, people who lives here, they really don't appreciate the freedom that they have, the security that they have, and, you know, they are safe here. This is what the great about this country. You can do whatever you want. You know, if it's legal, you sleep like a baby at night. You don't worry about anything.
Yeah.
This is what I was missing back home. That's what, you know, There's one incident that happened to me that I decided that I'm going to leave. I'm not going to stay there, despite what you said about the government asking me to, you know, to cheat in the material of that. That's not the case. The case was I was, you know, driving my car, going to my office, and it was traffic jam there. And we have a bank, like where, you know, the traffic jam stopped. And there's an old guy with the briefcase coming out of the bank. Probably he took some money from the bank. And then three, four guys, like thugs, I believe they belong to the government or something, they beat the guy. They took his briefcase in front of like tens of people just watching. An old guy getting beat, and nobody even stepped in to stop this. So I just told my wife then, you know, that's it for me. You know, if this happened to an old guy like that, I'm not safe here. I need to leave. I don't want this to my kids. I cannot stay there.
Wow. Okay, before we go, I have one more question.
Sure.
So you hated English when you were in high school. Did you never think you would move here? When you were that young?
I didn't think I'm going to come here, but my friend at college, they keep, you know, they always remember the TV show called Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So because I was really in love with that show and love with the culture of the American people, all my friends, they call me Mr. Dallas. they think that I'm suitable for that area. But I didn't think I'm going to come. I thought I'm going to go to my brother in Spain and we'll live with him. But he didn't encourage me to go there. That's why, you know, I came to the United States.
Well, I love your stories so much. I really, really do. Thank you for talking to us. And thank you for being so open and honest. And I love you a lot.
Yes, thank you.
I love you so much. I love your podcast, both of you. I'm really proud of you. And keep it up. I love it. I listen to it every single time. Sometimes I listen to it twice.
Oh,
wow. Thanks. Number one fan.
We need the download, so thanks. Yeah.
tell a friend.
Thanks, Baba. You're the best.
Thank you so much for calling me.
Bye, Baba.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow, that was very uplifting.
I love
it. I like how he took the time to be like, well, now that I have you here. Like,
first one, then two, then three.
He really used his platform to his abilities. Like, yeah, he was like,
waiting for that moment.
Now that I'm here, I would like to clarify a few things. That was amazing.
Yeah, I love my dad so much.
That was great.
Yeah. I think that's all.
Yeah,
that was a whirlwind of an episode. I'm glad we ended on my dad's phone call because it gave me the lift that I needed. You're right. It was uplifting.
Yeah, it was very uplifting. I was in a bad mood, but that put me in a better mood because he was so like happy to tell his
side. And he doesn't lie. Like, he genuinely loves the podcast.
Oh, no. He's got to tell his friends.
Yeah.
He really could. We got to get him like...
He was so happy when he got the mug.
ASAP.
Yeah.
To wear for us.
I told him that I ordered more stuff for him and he was like ecstatic. He was cool. Good. Yeah.
That'll be great. That's our episode. Hey, rate and review us if you love our dads.
Yeah. 5 stars, no less.
Yes, 5 stars, no less. Don't give us any of that bullshit. Follow us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, AMB. Follow us on Instagram at ethnicallyambig, AMBIG. Find us our website on ethnicallyambiguouspod.com where you can check out our footnotes, which we're gonna have links from all our shit, like all ranges. We're gonna have 100 footnotes today. It's come back from me refusing to do footnotes last week. And, follow me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh.
And you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, Shereen Y, SHERENWHY. And on Instagram, Shirohero, SHEEROHERO. I was on the Bechdel cast that came out today, Thursday, the 19th. We talked all about Aladdin with Jamie and Caitlin, and it was the best time ever.
Street rat, you... scoundrel.
I'm not gonna just those songs are so great. But it was a big influence in my life as a young Arab kid to be represented in a cartoon. That was the only representation we got, so I took it and we talked all about it, and I think I'm really proud of the episode. So go listen to it. It's Bechdel cast, and until next time.
Riff raff, street rat, scoundrel, take that.
Just a little snack, guys.
I need to look up lyrics. Back,
guys, gotta look to eat, gotta see an Abu. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna stop.
I like one of the lyrics is, "You're my only friend, Abu." It's yeah. Funky.
Also, Abu in Arabic, I talked about this on podcast, but it means father, which is weird to me that the monkey is called father. But anyways.
Gotta keep one jump ahead of the bread line, one swing ahead of the sword. I steal only what I can afford.
That's everything! Yeah. And that movie, it was my introduction to Robin Williams, and I'm obsessed with Robin Williams.
Yeah, Genie.
Yeah.
The Genie.
Yeah. I'm still sad.
That's a great lyric. New Robin Williams documentary is out on HBO. You should check it out.
Oh, shit.
Really good.
Good to know.
All right. Shereen, I get my pen.
I bet that.
Okay, thank you.